Chattanooga is the fourth largest city in Tennessee and was incorporated in 1839. It is on the Georgia border, just over 100 miles northwest of Atlanta, 100 miles from Knoxville, and 100 miles from Birmingham. When people hear the name of the town, they think of the song Chattanooga Choo Choo. I'm Jen, and you're listening to Southern Legends and Lies. Keep listening as I tell you some tales of the Nooga. Glenn Miller introduced the world to his song in 1941, the Chattanooga Choo Choo, and throughout World War II, it became a sensation. The Chattanooga train terminal was destined to be as big as Union Station, but by 1973, was in line to be demolished. A group of local businessmen saved the station and opened its doors once again as the city's first preservation project. The station and some train cars are now a hotel. There are restaurants, bars, a comedy club, a distillery, retail stores, and a park. Due to the railroads running throughout the city, it was a very crucial area during the Civil War and after. A major hub for industries. Nestled on the banks of the Tennessee River, early on, the town was prone to flooding. A severe flood impacted the area at least each decade, resulting in record losses for businesses and manufacturing plants. Just after the Civil War in 1867, 4 days of straight rainfall caused the river to rise 53 feet. 4,000 people had to be ferried out of the flooded area after the bridge was destroyed. The town decided to raise the grade of the streets of 40 blocks of Chattanooga's downtown. This meant the first floors and basements of many buildings would be abandoned. From the streets, you can now see arches of windows just above the sidewalk. The rooms were left as is and now have peeling wallpaper, stairs that lead nowhere, covered windows that leave the once thriving floors dark and eerie. Legends surfaced that when the city was raised 20 feet, they buried whatever and whoever was in the spaces. I believe I'd be more scared of vagrants and murderers than I would be of ghosts, but many locals believe the spirits of those impacted by the floods are still there. A man that worked at a business on Broad Street said while working in the basement alone one night, he got the eerie feeling someone was watching him. He worked up the nerve to turn around, and he was face to face with a spirit of a gentleman wearing old work clothes. He looked as if he were in pain. As soon as their eyes met, the ghost turned and walked right through the doorway in the basement that led to underground Chattanooga. The underground area is a labyrinth of winding tunnels and abandoned rooms, but sadly, due to the cave-ins and safety concerns, cannot be toured, or I would be there in a minute. Who knows what spirits are lurking in the underground? At 827 Broad Street in downtown, Chattanooga's Sheraton Reed House, the city's most luxurious hotel, used to sit a smaller structure called the Crutchfield House. The Thomas Crutchfield family built the inn in 1847 directly across from the rail terminal when the Western and Atlantic rail lines opened. These lines linked Chattanooga with Atlanta. In 1867, Jefferson Davis resigned from the Senate and stopped at the Crutchfield House to speak to a crowd about secession. Thomas's brother, William Crutchfield, jumped onto the counter and said Jefferson Davis was a traitor. The divided crowd became loud and argued, nearly causing a riot. Tensions were high, and Thomas Crutchfield sold the hotel not long after that. The hotel was occupied by Union forces during the Civil War and used as a hospital. In 1867, it burned to the ground. In 1871, Dr. John T. Reed and his son Samuel built a new hotel, the Reed House. It was far more elegant and its reputation spread across the country. Winston Churchill, Charles Lawton, Tallulah Bankhead, Gary Cooper, Eddie Rickenbacker, and Al Capone are many of the famous names that stayed on site. Ghosts have emerged from both buildings throughout the years. In room 311 of the Reed House, a presence of a young woman named Annalisa Netherly often appears to guests. Another spirit, Martha, frequently haunts rooms with men staying in them. Martha stayed at the hotel with her husband. However, he left her there to die alone. She spent her last days smoking and drinking. A spirit prankster can be found in the restaurant of the hotel, often moving liquor bottles and silverware. John Brown's Ferry Tavern was built in 1803. John was a Cherokee leader who owned 640 acres in the area and had the tavern built. By the 1830s, the land formed the boundary of the Cherokee Nation, and in 1838, the road that is by the structure is now known as the Trail of Tears National Historic Trail, the path where two Cherokee detachments were removed from the area to present-day Oklahoma. Union troops occupied the tavern to house their supplies and munitions. John was forced to leave his home, despite being only partially Cherokee, and he traveled the Trail of Tears. But it is said he found his way back to his land and is buried somewhere on the property. A tombstone was later erected in his honor. The tavern is the oldest home in Hamilton County, resting just below Lookout Mountain. People would travel while selling goods and love to stop at Brown's to spend the night and hear the stories John would tell. Legend states John would creep into the rooms where the guests were asleep and rob them of the money they just earned from selling goods. Many times he even killed them and threw their wagons and bodies into the Tennessee River. Years after Brown died, the river was dredged, and many broken wagon parts and human bones were recovered along Brown's Ferry Crossing. It seems Brown himself and many other victims still haunt the area. South Pittsburgh Hospital is an old hospital in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and was built on an underground spring that flows directly into the Tennessee River. This land was inhabited by a Native American tribe of Chiha Indians who lived and hunted the area around 1778. In 1863, Union soldiers were allowed to use the land for a base during the Civil War. However, the Confederates took it over and killed many soldiers and Native Americans in the process. The local townspeople were robbed of food and livestock by those Union soldiers and experienced great hardships. In 1959, the hospital was founded by four medical professionals. The building was originally 68,000 square feet, but additions were constructed after. With all these hard times and deaths on the land and the energy from the underground spring, the land and building are now one of the most haunted sites in the state. Most of the haunted activity seems to come from the time of the hospital. In 1998, the facility was closed, but the building is still standing today, and the ghostly encounters are frequent. While the hospital was open, items would move around on their own, and figures were often seen walking the halls. The second floor was where the emergency room was, and residual screams are constantly heard. There is also a two-year-old toddler that's been seen, and you often hear him laughing and playing. Occasionally, he will ask you to pick him up. Oh, he is referred to as Buddy. On the third floor is a 7-foot-tall ghost that will yell out, "Leave me be." He is thought to be a surgeon that was once with the hospital, or a Chiha warrior, or even something demonic. Clearly, he wants nothing to do with the living. A naughty nurse is said to haunt the building as well. She has frequently, inappropriately touched many ghost investigators. I guess she's still handsy in the afterlife. A spirit of a janitor is known to manifest on many of the floors as well. The hospital is now home to a paranormal research group, the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital Paranormal Research Center, and you can pay to be part of an overnight ghost investigation. They do offer daylight tours for those who want a less creepy experience. They state you will see apparitions, hear disembodied voices, record Class A EVPs, and may even be touched by a spirit. Maybe that naughty nurse. They claim these phenomena happen daily, so your chances of a spiritual interaction are highly likely. The hospital eventually closed in 1998 after several malpractice lawsuits and wrongful death charges. Many rumors had already begun to surface about the hauntingly terrifying spiritual activity in the building. I'm not sure I would want to investigate a place with that much negative history. Do you dare? It's not very far from Chattanooga. The highest land along the Tennessee River is a bluff in Chattanooga. Early on, this bluff was held sacred by the Cherokee tribe. They believed it was home to Tianuma, a sacred giant mythical hawk. In the 1800s, however, most of the Cherokees were gone from the area, and in 1854, an iron smelting plant was built on that land. Bluff Furnace was one of the earliest industrial enterprises. Before the Civil War, production stopped, and the building was destroyed during the war. With Chattanooga being a battlefield, both sides used the bluff as a lookout. In 1904, one of the wealthiest Chattanooga families built a riverfront mansion on that same bluff. Ross Faxon was a very prosperous insurance broker and decided to build an Edwardian-style mansion on the bluff. The Faxon family lived there for nearly a decade and then sold the property to the Thomas family in 1920. Benjamin F. Thomas, one of the founders of Coca-Cola, passed away, and his widow Ann Taylor Thomas purchased the home. The home and property was later owned by Benjamin Thomas's nephew, George Thomas Hunter. He started working for his uncle's Coca-Cola company and climbed the ranks from clerk to secretary on up to president. When he inherited the company at his uncle's death, Coca-Cola had taken over the country and was a very profitable business. Hunter also created the Benwood Foundation, a private charitable trust to aid in helping others. Hunter passed in 1951. Hunter's charity, the Benwood Foundation, donated the home to the Chattanooga Art Association to open the George Thomas Hunter Gallery of Art. George had a fondness for artwork and antiquities when he was alive. The museum opened in 1952, and in 1975, a new building was added to the complex, along with the name change to the Hunter Museum of Art. The foundation also donated 40 American paintings to the gallery, valued at around $1 million. Of course, with all that history, there would be some hauntings. Five ghosts are known to inhabit the gallery today. Only one has been identified, but staff constantly feels watched, and night security often are spooked by shadows. The known spirit is that of Miss Augusta Hoffman. Augusta lived at number 15 Bluffview, just next door to Hunter's estate. She lived with her sister Nancy Bennett and nephew William, who were tenants of the Hunters. Augusta worked for a local dressmaker doing needlepoint, but one day in 1915, she disappeared. Her sister stated she moved to Knoxville to marry a man named Brown. The family continued to receive letters from Augusta until her sister passed nearly 2 years later. After Nancy died, the letters stopped, but the family didn't think much of it since she was only close to her sister. The family left Chattanooga. Fast forward to 1924, and Mrs. Hunter decided to have the basement floor redone. The carpenters ripped up the rotten floorboards, revealing a skeleton with shoes and false teeth. The police were called, and Mrs. Hunter remembered how Augusta had gone missing. A local dentist confirmed the false teeth were indeed hers. It seemed she was buried with acid since her hair and clothes were completely gone. Police immediately tracked down her nephew, William, and his wife, who claimed to have no knowledge of their aunt's murder. They claimed she left and stopped receiving letters after the mother passed. No marriage certificate was ever issued for Augusta. Police lured the Bennetts to Chattanooga to interview them, but as soon as they crossed the city line, they were arrested for murder. Augusta's spirit haunts the Hunter Museum. Feminine shadows appear peering out of windows. Apparitions have appeared in photos, and a strange acidic smell is often lingering in the area. I wonder if her sister killed her or if the nephew really did. No one will ever know. Located just near Chattanooga in Marion County is the Nickajack Cave. In 1967, the Nickajack Dam was constructed and flooded by the Tennessee Valley Authority to fill the Nickajack Lake. The cave became partially flooded, and the entrance above water is 140 feet wide and 20 to 25 feet high. It is home to a massive colony of endangered gray bats, over 100,000, and is now a wildlife refuge operated by the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency. Female bats return to the cave each spring to give birth and raise their young. You can even watch the bats leave at dusk to go feed from an observation deck. The name Nickajack came from a Chickamauga Cherokee town located in the area underneath what is now the lake. A band of renegade Indians, Cherokee and Creek warriors, inhabited the town. They took the name of Chickamauga to describe their joined tribe. An African American named Jack Civil was a free man taken prisoner by those renegades. He later became the leader of the band, and the town was named in his honor. The then appropriate Nigger Jack's Town, which later turned into Nickajack, still not appropriate, but a little bitter. I'm so glad we are all equal now. The area around the Tennessee River where they were located was narrow and treacherous, with names of places like the Suck, the Raccoon Mountain Range area that was a notorious whirlpool. It was near impossible to travel down its dangerous waters. The hidden location was perfect for the renegades to pillage and murder settlers and frontiersmen. They used a secret cave called Tekalassi, now Nickajack, to hide out and store items. In 1775, the Chickamaugans attacked people in Middle and East Tennessee, killing more than 400 settlers. That year, the Cherokee war chief, Dragon Canoe, cursed the land during the illegal Treaty of Sycamore Shoals, a large land purchase of Kentucky and Tennessee by the Henderson's Transylvania Company. This was negotiated by Richard Henderson and Daniel Boone. Dragon Canoe vowed the land would always be dark and bloody and never be inhabitable by anyone. In 1794, an army of 500 men from Tennessee and Kentucky sought revenge on their murdered loved ones and attacked the Chickamaugans, killing many. The cave was mined for saltpeter in the 1800s. I had no idea what saltpeter was, but apparently it's potassium nitrate, and I do know that. It's used as a common food preservative, used in fertilizer, and in fireworks and rockets. Good to know. Many Civil War soldiers mined the cave, sometimes 100 soldiers, since saltpeter was used to make gunpowder. Think of all the saltpeter that was taken from the cave and all the lives that were lost because of it. In the 20th century, a few different promoters bought the cave and attempted to make a profit as a tourist attraction. The first owner, Lawrence Ashley, didn't have much luck and then gained national publicity when he was lost in the cave. He was lost for several days, but was able to dig out by making another exit. That story turns out to have been a publicity stunt to gain more tourists. The second owner was Leo Lambert, who also owned Ruby Falls nearby. Hales Bar Dam was the answer to the issues with the treacherous waters of the river. It would calm the waters from rushing downstream so fast and help with navigation. It was scheduled to be complete in 1909. However, many issues delayed the construction, including a weak limestone foundation. In 1913, it was finally opened and began leaking immediately. A rag gang was set up to handle the leaks and used anything to stop, including rags, hay, mattresses, and whatever they could find and thought would work. Their efforts did very little, and by 1931, the dam was leaking 1,000 cubic feet per second. During the construction of the dam, several hundred workers lost their lives, and after completion, still more, including at least two children who used a service tunnel that experienced a leak. In 1963, it was determined that constant repair to Hell's Bar Dam was just too expensive, and a new dam would be erected, the Nickajack Dam. So the lake was drained. In the 1960s, the TVA decided to permanently flood the cave and area to build a lake and new dam for generating electricity. This announcement caught the attention of country musician Johnny Cash. In 1967, he entered the cave just before it was flooded with the intention of killing himself. However, Johnny Cash spent hours reflecting on his life, and it is said that he found God in that cave. He let everyone know that he was born again in Nickajack Cave. Maybe that's what we all need sometime, to find a nice, quiet place to be alone with our thoughts. Or maybe there is something spiritual in that cavern that guided him to peace. Now, when it was originally flooded in the early 1900s, many things were consumed by the water, including Long Cemetery. None of the bodies were relocated, and up until the late 1990s, three headstones were visible out of the water 70 yards from the riverbank. Those headstones were for Henry, Moses, and Sarah Long. A flu epidemic swept through the area, killing many of the local children who were buried there as well. Not long after the area was flooded, no trespassing signs were posted and fences put up to preserve the endangered gray bats. In 1992, two divers ignored the signs and ventured into the flooded cave to explore it underwater. They thought they could reach unflooded parts of the cave. David Grant did surface in an air pocket, but did not have enough oxygen in his tank to get out. For 14 hours, he waited for his impending doom, but the TVA lowered the lake level and Gant was successfully rescued. Through the years, many accidents have happened on the lake, numerous boating fatalities and injuries, and drownings. One incident, a rescuer surfaced the water only to be killed by being pinned between the boat and the dam. The area is said to be home to many restless spirits that died through attacks between settlers and the Chickamaugans, the workers and residents who died during the construction of the dams, and many other souls that have been trapped due to the curse Chief Dragon Canoe put on the area. Is this all coincidence, or is the chief's curse still in place? The thousands of bats flying out of caves certainly help with the spooky vibes. So much history and energy is housed in that area. There has to be tons of ghostly encounters. We are headed to Chattanooga next week, or as my youngest says, Chaganooda, for spring break. Let me know if there are any must for our trip, or if you've experienced anything otherworldly in that area.